welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast where we ask the important questions like, Citizen Kane, is there any point discussing this movie anymore? We're gonna.
This is the censored version of the show. Swears will be bleeped.
Beep.
But fear not, dear listener. As always, the full uncensored version is available early on our Patreon for as little as £1, buddy. Find the link next to wherever you clicked play.
And hear us go, fuckity.
Yeah.
That's going to be a nightmare to censor in about an hour.
You've just ruined your own day.
Why did I just do that to myself?
Oh, no. Ruined your own day. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm off work and I'm remembering who I am again. I'm realizing that I'm not defined by what I do.
Okay.
And that I'm outside of the contract of switching
nice
hard labor for monetary gain. I'm actually a person. So to nice anyone who hasn't taken holiday...
Me.
Do it.
Okay.
Because I'm me again. Yeah, just you've got scheduled holiday.
Mm.
Take it and go, oh, I'm a person.
Okay.
It's the best. How about you, man?
Fine, I guess. Head's in the bin. A little bit wobbly.
Great.
It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah,
doesn't
yeah
really
yeah
matter. Yeah. It's one of these things where you look and you sort of start questioning your own existence and everything you stand for and everything you're doing and everything you've done. You know what I mean? You sort of like, oh,
uh-huh.
Am I really living or am I just ticking boxes at this point? Like, what am I doing?
I can tell you it's the latter, mate.
Yeah, feeling that.
Just one left to tick.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Ooh. Honestly, don't. Best pickup line at the moment is, fucking hell, are you a toaster? Because I'm reckoning a long bath would sort out a lot of my issues.
Your Google history is just shotgun tastings, my area.
Local poisons. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Local poisonous plants. Yeah,
that's
yeah
it.
Yeah.
Artisan
you can,
only.
You can pretend that you were just bad at foraging.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah, yeah. How to forage mushrooms and then just working backwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What are we doing today, Ben?
All right, buddy. So today we're doing Citizen Kane. It's a film that most movie fans hate for being called the greatest movie of all time.
That it is.
And today we're going to knuckle down and decide whether 2025 is the year that we can officially leave this ancient relic in the past. Or whether it's still relevant to an understanding of the world that we live in today.
There's 1,001 things you've probably heard about this movie before, especially if you're a fan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to repeat all that because you've heard it. And if you're not a fan, you wouldn't want to hear all that stuff either. But today we're bringing everyone together and asking the real question. Is there much point in chatting about Citizen Kane in 2025? Is it still worth a watch? Because, you
yeah
know?
Yeah, yeah.
This film is old, old, old. It was made in 1941, Ben.
Yeah.
And I've got a list of things that this film is older than.
Go on.
CPR.
That's upsetting.
Engagement rings.
That's understandable.
Transistors.
Not quite sure what that is, but I'm here for it.
The bit that were in radios in the 50s that made like cheap radios possible and computers.
Ah.
Mainly the radios. The Big Bang Theory.
The TV show?
Yeah, and also the actual Big Bang Theory.
Oh, okay.
Ballpoint pens.
Okay.
Velcro.
Oh, godlike invention.
The NHS.
Mm, okay.
And Slinkies.
Oh, okay. I can relate to that one.
When Orson Welles was making this film, I want you to think,
yeah,
when he went to write something down,
mm-hmm,
he wasn't doing it with a ballpoint.
What was he doing it with?
Pencil, I imagine.
Ooh.
Because you're not going to get a fountain pen out to make a quick note, are you?
I don't know, just napkin and a quill.
When Kane marries Susan Alexander in this film.
Yeah.
He's not giving her an engagement ring.
What does he give her?
Polio? I don't know.
Piano lessons? I don't know. Yeah, something.
Yeah. So for the benefit of those people that have got no plans on seeing this film, I imagine it's a fair bunch here. We're going to just quickly whip through the plot so you know what the hell we're talking about later yeah in the episode. Consider this your spoiler warning. But Ben, yeah, you've pit me to the post this week.
So we do this thing where we take it in turns writing breakdowns for each other. I've written a breakdown for you this week, buddy.
Uh-huh.
Which is...
I see that there's titles, which I will take care to read.
Thank you.
Because I know you love a title.
Thank yeah you. It helps me break up my day. Helps me feel like a person.
Yeah.
Appreciate you. Love you. Yeah, man. Have fun with it. I've written it. I really got into the character of Rob McFarlane and wrote it as you would see right it.
This is revenge for last week, isn't it?
No.
Right.
Enjoy.
Rosebud. Rosebud and the real estate. Mm. We witness the dying moments of hero Charles Kane whispering his final words, Rosebud. But what does this mean? What is Rosebud? Who is Rosebud? And why do we care? As the film opens in the form of a news report covering the world's loss of a media mogul and a titan of industry, we see a gorgeous, if, you know, slightly small for my conservative, privately educated taste, estate. Not privately educated, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Complete with a personal zoo, which for my conservative, privately educated taste, had cages a bit too big. I mean, fair, you don't want to have too much space. Don't want the animals getting the wrong idea. I wouldn't call them animals. The report covering Charles Kane's life, summarizing everything from his rise to newspaper mogul, political ambitions, and his eventual downfall. One journalist is tasked with investigating Charles's life to find out who Rosebud is, primarily to sell more papers, but the rise and fall of Charles Foster Kane.
That's a new voice.
Yeah, thank you. Told through a series of flashbacks, we witness a bank buy a human child from the horrid mountain paws, and whisk him off to a life of luxury and lavishness. Oh, poor Petal. we see Charles acquire a newspaper and his transformation into a powerful and influential public figure. Kane's early morality and desire to use his wealth to help people are left in the shadow of his growing ambition and arrogance. This is nicely done, Bud.
Thank you.
Now, after seeing him smash the back doors off of every business dealing he touches, crushing the newspaper business like it was made of paper.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a parallel there.
Yeah.
Sort of. We now see Kane's relationships and watch him crush some fine blue chip cabaret puss.
Wow. That's a pretty strong take. All right.
I mean, I just want, I don't want many things in life, Ben.
Yeah, dude.
All right. But some fine blue chip cabaret puss is up there.
Bro, I saw the ankles. You know what I mean?
His first marriage ends because he was too busy chasing power. His second marriage deteriorates as he tries to take pity on a poor, always a mistake, and make her dreams of being a singer come true. But instead of being grateful for this opportunity, she just yells about doing jigsaw puzzles all the time.
She does.
To be honest, Ben.
Yeah.
People like you, the uneducated, unwashed masses.
Sure.
Jigsaw's pretty impressive.
Mate, they're odd. You know what I mean? Yeah. Shut up. Just know your lane. You know what I mean? As if that poor's going to be doing jigsaw. She's going to be fucking rolling around in her own shit, yelling stuff at the ceiling. Do you like the sun or Blu-ray? That's what she's going to be yelling
I
at.
I judge
traffic.
The value of my relationships in just straight number terms, and it's just the number of pieces of a jigsaw that they can complete.
Six. That's where I'm at.
Right,
six
there we
and
go.
I'm out. You know what I mean?
There we go.
Yeah.
Kane's relentless drive and unfaltering ambition isolates him from his friends. He loses his political career and his personal happiness. He's plagued with the tragic irony of gain immense wealth, be known by everybody, and become profoundly lonely. I mean,
boo-hoo.
I'm sure being a bit sad in your literal palace would help. I'd rather have one of my many servants clean up my sad boy to preface episode tissue farm than do it myself.
Right.
Okay, Ben, I thought, just side note here, I thought we agreed to not mention the sad boy depressive episode Tissue Farm.
I mean, someone's got to plow the fields, you know what I mean?
Currently, which one of our floors is clean?
I swept the field, you know what I mean? I plowed the field.
You harvested.
I harvested recently, bud. Were they happy or sad tissues? I don't know. I don't remember.
No one can remember. Right, part three. Rosebud. The journalist's investigation turns up nothing, completely empty regarding the significance of Rosebud. A few theories are developed and people have their opinions as to what Rosebud could mean, but they're poor people, so their opinions mean less than nothing. Back to the factory, you actual trained chimp of a human, make me my money. Ben, you really keyed in to my incredibly liberal communist.
That's the Rob McFarlane,
okay,
I know.
Yeah. The fact that this is the Rob McFarlane, you know, makes me question if we're friends.
Dude, you, like, the amount of times I've seen your eyes light up whilst reading the most horrendous put downs to pause is outrageous.
Yeah, because it's my kink. I'm like,
I know.
Although you deny my right to the title, I grew up a poor, and when I see a scathing put down, I'm like, oh, hurt me, mummy.
Yeah, I know. I've literally heard your semi knock the desk twice. You know what I mean?
Kane's possessions at his moderate estate are being sorted for auction or burned, and we finally see Rosebud, his childhood sled from the day the bank bought him for $50,000. A brief insight of how this media mogul's final thoughts were of his lost childhood innocence before the corruption of money and wealth consumed him.
Pussy.
Pussy.
Right. I mean, I'm gonna say, Ben,
yeah.
I really wish I was you so I wasn't able to read that. But unfortunately.
Try writing it.
I mean, dude. You're getting good with your letters.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, we'll work on your shapes and your animals, and we might have a whole human.
One day I might have my own zoo and my own crazy mental jigsaw puzzle doing wife who's just screaming at me for no fucking reason all the time.
A man can dream.
You know what I mean?
Having read that, mm-hmm. Very kindly provided in inverted commas, my voice.
Yeah,
I'm going to assume you're firmly in the I hate Citizen Kane camp.
Not
like tell me your thoughts on this movie. Set out your stall as to your initial argument.
I don't hate this film.
Strong start.
I don't love this film.
Oh,
I can appreciate what it does,
right?
Because there are some elements in this film that blew me away, and I was not expecting it from a 1941 movie,
right?
From a 25, 26-year-old director. I wasn't expecting this. Uh-huh. The subject matter doesn't interest me at all. I didn't care about Kane or Rosebud or the investigation into this. It's The Social Network all over again. I can appreciate it.
Right.
It's a fun
2 hours-ish.
Mm-hmm. The story is boring.
Right, okay.
But the film itself as a film, very interesting.
Okay.
So I had to switch up how I was watching it almost immediately because I was like,
right,
I don't care about this. How about you?
This is a film I admire much more than I enjoy.
That surprises me because
I think the Social Network comparison is really apt to the point where when Orson Welles was making this film, he kept repeating that it wasn't about W. Randolph Hearst.
Okay.
In order to get the film made and seen, because W. Randolph Hearst was the Mark Zuckerberg of his time.
Yeah.
He's remembered as the irresponsible media tycoon of the sort of late 19th, early 20th centuries, who set standards by which journalism ought not to be practiced.
Yeah.
He was like, sensationalism, I don't care if it's true, we're going to be first, and it's going to shock people.
Yeah.
He built a huge empire, owned like dozens of newspapers, magazines, radio stations. See if this begins to sound familiar, right?
Okay.
Known for prioritizing sensationalism over factual reporting, owned Hearst Castle, a sprawling estate in California filled with art, exotic animals, and luxury beyond comprehension.
Sounds like Pablo Escobar.
Had a well-known affair with an actress who struggled with her acting career, partly due to his attempts to promote her beyond her talents.
Sure, Pablo.
Ran unsuccessfully for political office, also Pablo.
Also Pablo.
Including a failed bid for president and a term in Congress.
Pablo.
And in his later years, faced financial difficulties, becoming increasingly isolated, relying on loans to keep his empire afloat.
Pablo.
It's Pablo or Citizen Kane. This is so clearly about that guy.
Yeah.
In the same way that when Social Network was being made, they were like, look, this isn't necessarily a true account, but it's an account based on these court documents that are public information.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
That sense of it being a takedown of a large owner or controller of information. This was the Social Network of the 1940s.
Okay.
Because you didn't have the internet. You had a man who controlled every newspaper in your state.
Yeah, paper Facebook.
Origami Facebook.
Instead of sending pokes and stuff like that, he would just fuck the poor.
Yeah, right, exactly. Which he literally did with his actress missus.
Yeah.
So that kind of sense of like, oh, it's not about this guy. We've 100% carried through, and we're dealing with the same problems.
Right.
That they were 100 years ago.
Okay.
W. Randolph Hearst, and I've got a thing on this later.
Mm-hmm.
W. Randolph Hearst is not a character who's gone away by any means.
Okay.
So there's a social relevance, but there's also a filmmaking relevance. You know, there's so much that this film did.
There is, man. This is where I'm going to bring up my first point, because I was not expecting this film to do what it does.
Right.
In the way that it does. The storytelling in this movie, I love 1940s films. I love 1950s films. A lot of them are sort of like goofy sci-fis and stuff like this, but I like the few dramas here and there.
Uh-huh.
The thing that I like about 40s and 50s movies is the simplicity of it all.
Mm.
You don't have to understand which way the story is going to go, because every story back then went A to B to C.
Yeah, it's an autistic man's dream.
It is.
You just know exactly what to expect.
It makes sense.
It's like watching an episode of Friends for the 9th time. But you've never seen the film before.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
A to B to C. Yeah. It's all very comfortable. It's all very, like, easy to digest, I guess it would be.
But also charming.
Charming, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's reminiscent of a simpler time.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, some 26-year-old is like, "Yeah, but what about this, mate? Have you ever thought about doing it, telling it through narration of an investigation, through flashbacks of unreliable narrators that we can only partially trust?" And
every time you get a retelling of this man's life, because the film is essentially four retellings of a man's life,
yeah,
you get a different version of who he is.
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, imagine like. You've got an investigative journalist who is hired by a newspaper owned by Kane to do Kane's obituary and is then tasked with going out and finding out what his last words meant.
Yeah.
A, we have to trust that this employee is loyal to this corporation because we saw how he treated his businesses towards the end of the film. And that messed with me a little bit because I was like, okay, so the entire film now comes into question.
Yep.
Because it's through the retelling of an investigative journalist that worked for him. And this guy is clearly, very, very clearly, a massive cockwomble, right? It's now hard to trust everything that I've seen and heard. Which is great because it just throws in the trust issues.
Yep.
It's almost like, and this is going to be like, it's a bold take. It's almost Fincher in the way that we do the flashbacks.
Isn't it just
in reliable narration?
Right?
The mystery, the investigation, that. This whole insidious undertone that goes through this very sort of like, I don't need to buy an opera house. She's going to sink at the Met. And then immediately on screen is a sort of like
opera house that he's built.
Kitten buys an opera house.
So
amazingly funny.
I would agree with you. And I would say that the nonlinear storytelling in this is almost proto Tarantino.
Mm.
People sit around and they stroke their chin. And they go, oh, Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And Tarantino, he was brilliant with a nonlinear narrative. This was the first one.
Yeah.
You know everything that's going to happen in the film by 2 minutes in because they start the film with a newsreel obituary for the life you're about to see.
It's mad, isn't it? So, it is actually mad.
So you know everything that's going to
happen. 41.
Right. So 1941, he pioneers nonlinear storytelling and there is that sense of unease. There is that sense of, can I trust this narrator?
Yeah.
And the whole film centers around, you know, how can we get to know this person? Which, as a statement to make when you're talking about somebody that you are actively taking down, is really interesting.
Yeah.
In the same way that The Social Network goes, we've got all of this material from people that are currently suing Mark Zuckerberg, so this is what they think of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For 1941, when they don't have ballpoint pens yet, but they're doing subjective storytelling.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Come on.
It's so...
Come on.
You've got to understand as well, right? But unfortunately, this is now like, it's a standard in modern storytelling.
Yes, it is.
We are spoiled to a point where watching this film now in 2025 will hold fuck all merit because...
Yeah, it's not Tenet. Do you know what I mean?
No, this is what I'm saying. Like, we are so spoiled for choice when it comes to great nonlinear storytelling.
Right.
Unreliable narration, and it just leaves you with more questions than it answers. Like I love that about films. But give it the context, right? This is black and white, Orson Welles' first feature, 1941. People must have walked out of the theater and been like, my brain is changed.
Memento. Remember the first time you watched Memento?
Exactly.
And oh, films can be this way.
Yeah, hated it. Thought it was stupid. We watched it together in uni. Hated it.
Not only was it a first in nonlinear storytelling, I'm going to blow your mind on a couple of other things here, right?
Go on. Yeah.
Cinematography. So he hired a very, very talented cinematographer and basically let him run hog wild with a load of money.
Yeah.
There's a load of stuff in here that was never done before this movie. Having everything in the frame be in focus.
Yes.
It's called deep focus, where you get to choose what you look at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not only is that an interesting technical cinematic first for me, it adds to the quality of what the movie is trying to say.
Okay.
By allowing you to choose where you're going to look in the frame, it's allowing you to choose what to focus on, much like the narrators are. It's not, you're not being told this is what to pay attention to. You're just going, here is the information. What will you choose to look at?
Oh my God.
Right?
There is an incredible example of what you've just said, and it's only just hit me. When his second wife takes the medicine and they have to break into the room, Kane and Bernstein break into her bedroom. She's OD'd on something. Kane's like call for the doctor.
Yep.
That entire shot, right? I was like, something seems off because I couldn't tell which way she was facing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know whether it was the lighting or this, that, and the other. But it's because there is a glass and a spoon.
Yes, there is.
In the very forefront of the shot that is very, very in focus, but the door is very, very in focus.
Yep.
You get a choice what to focus on, whether it's the substances that have obviously been misused,
yep.
the ODing wife who is now horribly depressed trying to kill herself.
Yep.
Or the faux concern that Kane is showing with the genuine concern that Bernstein is showing, sort of further separating Kane from humanity.
They pioneered the use of an optical printer. This was the first time in cinema history.
I was hoping you were going to say something like
where
this.
Where they would focus the frame.
Yeah.
And then they would mask out most of it. So, for instance, in the bottom of the frame, in the foreground, like you said, you've got the medicine, you've got the spoon and the needle and whatever, right?
Yeah.
They focused on that and then they blacked out the rest of the frame. And then they reshot the scene with the other bits in focus and that blacked out and printed two images to the same frame.
This is exactly it.
Right.
It's insane.
Again, Ben, they did all of this in a Velcro-less world.
Yeah.
Do you know how much less time people had because they had to keep retying children's shoes? It was constant.
Oh my God. Just grow up. Right? Learn how to do it yourself. You know what I mean?
Velcro fixed all of that.
Learn like I did. Get some rollerblades.
Right.
And then sit on your front garden until someone goes, that's not it. And then you keep going. You know what I mean? That's it. Grow up.
The other, the last thing that they invented, ceilings, mate.
Dude, don't do this because, again, this is in my notes.
Right.
Dude, don't do this because, again, this is in my notes.
Right. Tell me, so what's interesting about the ceilings, Ben?
The fact that they have them is interesting for a start because I can't point out many early 40s movies that have visible ceilings, like the set is an actual enclosed set.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of it was built on stages. They just didn't bother with the things.
Pretty much all on stages.
Yeah, because they had a sort of, they had a set repertoire of shots that they would use, and it was sort of like we dip into three.
Right,
it's long, mid, close.
Yeah.
Do we go from feet up? No, are you fucking mental?
Being a director in the '40s was easy. That shot, then that shot, then that shot. Easy.
Excellent. Where's me money? And Orson Welles was like, you lazy Citizen Kane looking pricks. Wait until I make your job harder.
Right.
You just wait until I make your job harder. There's a couple of other examples that I just want to touch on real quick. One that I thought was particularly Fincher-esque.
Right.
The first time that we visit the second wife's club.
Yes, yes. Susan Alexander's club. She's down in Atlantic City drinking herself to death. Yeah. And the journalist pops in. She's like, you can fuck right off.
Yeah, before all of that, buddy, before he even gets there, we see the neon sign on the roof and it's raining.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera goes through the neon sign, which I thought was pretty impressive because it's on a dolly.
Right.
It's going through a tiny gap. I know the size of cameras back then was enormous.
It's a fridge.
Either that sign was giant or there was some trickery afoot.
Uh-huh.
Some mischiefs. It goes towards a window and then does a transition through the window using the rain and the mist as the transition
point. I was because Orson Welles obviously went, look, I've just seen this movie called Panic Room. It's coming out.
This is what I was saying. Yeah. I was literally like, dude, Fincher had to be given like $60 million to play around with this. And Orson Welles was like, yeah, just hold on one sec. Can we just go through the window and transition it out?
I'll just do it in analog, mate.
It's insane.
The simplicity of these tricks kind of underplays how clever they are. In the same way that if you give me like 70 ingredients and then go make a thing, I'll be like, yeah, fine. If you give me three, a lot of the ways that these effects were achieved, like the crane shot through the Atlantic City neon sign or light bulb sign, because they didn't have neon. This predates neon.
This is insane.
It predates an element.
Amazing.
Or the ceilings is a good example. The reason they didn't show them before is because they would build the walls of a set.
Yeah, of course.
And then they'd have no ceiling and they'd have all the lights.
Yeah.
Because old films were not that sensitive. Lenses were quite dark. And so anytime you see a 1940s film, they are performing under lights as bright or brighter than the sun. Right? It's just melting.
Yeah.
That's why they had to wear a lot of makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And Orson Welles was like, well, I want the ceiling visible. So they would dig holes in the floor to put the camera in so that they could shoot up from like knee height. And then they just built fake ceilings out of thin fabric and just had all the mics in there. And you go, when you explain it, you're like, oh, yeah, it's easy. Simple. But you're like, yeah, but no one had done it before. And the film had been around for 50 years.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Oh, it's simple.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's simple. And that's why it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like the way that he's done this, the way that he's just pulled stuff out of thin air and gone, yeah, this will work. And then they're still being utilized to this day is mental
to
me.
It's insane.
It's mental.
So, cinematic history. Mm-hmm. Totally. I get that. Yeah. That's all for me. That's all putting it in the admire column. Not in the love column.
Yes.
Like, is this film still worth watching? Is it still lovable because it was the first to do stuff? Like, you're not still with your first girlfriend, even though she was the first to do many things. You're not sat there being like, oh, yeah, I should. That's my favorite. That's the best one.
Got you.
But cinema seems to go Citizen Kane. That's the best one. I got a lot of reasons for that, but I want to hear why you think that this...
I think there's a lot of merit held towards the first to cross the line for something when it comes to like achieving something new.
Merit, yes.
A lot of merit that comes from achieving something new. And if that achievement is achieved on a certain bit of land from a certain nationality of person... It gets dined out on
forever
for about 1,000 years.
Forget the genocides. We made trains. Go us.
You know what I mean? That. That's the kind of thing. Yeah.
How did you get the resources to invent trains? Ignore that. Ignore that.
I've looked at countless lists. That was good. I've looked at countless lists, right? And I, in prep for this episode, I was a little bit of a shit house on Facebook, and I joined a group.
Oh, okay.
Called Film Buffs.
Right. Okay, I thought you could say Aryan Nation for a second there. I was really worried.
No. Called Film Buffs, and I was like, I want to try and get like something going that's going to be quite fun to be a part of. And this, so posted the thing. We came up with the thing of Citizen Kane was never really that great. Just posted that. Just see what happens.
For a cinephile group.
Yeah, they're all self-proclaimed film aficionados.
Oh.
And that's been said to me twice by two separate people on this post.
If you ever describe yourself using the word aficionado, know that you've gone wrong.
Yeah, 1,000%. 1,000%. You're too far gone.
Right.
There's no saving you. You need to give
Take
up.
Take a step back.
Pick a new hobby.
You don't know me like that, all right?
But yeah, so these movie aficionados, we've had like, there's been shed loads of people agreeing. There's been shed loads of people saying, well, the technical achievements are an absolute marvel. They are incredible.
I agree. And that's what we've been talking about for the last half hour.
This is exactly it. And we can't debate that, but it is boring as fuck. And I'm like, yes, buddy. A few saying that, you know, it's actually topped the AFI's top list of all time.
How much do you enjoy it? The AFI lover. I'm asking you, not the AFI.
Do all movie aficionados get their opinions from the AFI?
Yes.
Is the question that I want to ask. Okay, cool. Well, now let me know.
That's what the A stands for, Ben.
It's great. It's the top of every list. It's all this, that, and the other. But I think the one thing that everyone is forgetting is, right, this is essentially the story of a child who was bought, placed to work.
Yes.
Right? Bought, signed his life away. Not him. His parents signed him away. He was bought, placed in an environment where he's there to work. He's essentially business property, right?
You have a huge amount of wealth through inheritance. We've kidnapped you and raised you in our ways so that you can use that inheritance wisely for our purposes, because we are your bank.
We are in charge of your education.
Yes.
We're in charge of your future career. The idea to have one person purposely built to protect and unify our business endeavors.
Yeah, 100%.
Citizen Kane is RoboCop. Before RoboCop is RoboCop. You switch out the police force with the bank.
Right.
And now you've got we can build in bigger, better, stronger. But they're talking about a newspaper mogul rather than like a shooty-shooty.
So they're building the perfect investor. Rather than the perfect police officer.
But
they forget about the love angle, which is why he comes out a bit weird.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And it's kind of the same story, you know what I mean? They both die and they're both still forced to work.
Right, okay. So you're saying that being taken into the care of the ultra rich at a young age.
I love how you're phrasing this.
Bear with me. Let me cook.
No, I got you.
Being taken into the care of the ultra rich at a young age.
Yeah.
Raised on a life of extreme luxury and then given a trust fund of hundreds of thousands of pounds per month, right?
Yeah.
is equivalent to being pinned to the floor and having your limbs taken off by shotgun blasts. Yeah, I can see that. I can
not
see
too
that.
Dissimilar,
not too dissimilar.
Is what
yeah,
I'm
yeah, yeah, yeah. The parallels are scary.
This is what I'm saying. RoboCop 1941. Do you know what
right,
I mean?
Okay.
Now looky here. See, you've got 20 seconds to comply.
I love the idea that RoboCop 1921, because again, we don't have transistors yet. It'd just be covered in valves.
Yes. I don't know. Let it warm up for a little bit. You can't. It will blow valves.
He's
let
like
it warm up for a bit.
50s guitar amp.
Yes. Oh no! It'd be the day the Earth stood still, dude.
It's that
the guy that comes
yeah,
down
yeah,
to
yeah,
Earth.
Yeah,
that's incredible. Yeah.
Okay.
See,
okay.
It works.
I've got a slightly closer parallel.
Okay.
Than RoboCop, and I hear RoboCop. I do.
Yeah. I know.
But I'm going to talk about some politics for a bit, and I'm going to talk about them non-judgmentally, okay?
Yeah, I'm super into politics. Let's go.
I know you don't care. There's currently a man who owns an information empire who's been given an office in the White House after buying a media organization or an information platform and wildly changing its outlook. And then
is this the one that carries sinks into new buildings and it's like, just let that sink in.
Right.
Is this the same guy? No, is this Elon Musk?
This is Elon Musk. Yeah.
Yeah. Elon Musk carried a sink into the Twitter head offices and was like, just let that sink
in.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Dickhead.
This is a man. I've got some tweets.
Hit me with it.
Elon Musk. I have a World War I trench knife embedded in my bedroom wall just in case. 1917 edition. More useful than a gun in close quarters.
I don't think that's true.
That is.
I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true.
No.
The Guardian, inverted commas, is a nest of paedophile apologists.
Okay.
Right.
Nest.
It's a nest. This is a man who bought a Path of Exile 2 account, fully leveled up.
Hold on. No, 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 All right. Him and Asmongold are going at it left, right, and centre.
They are.
I'm in it. It's right. still going.
It's a popular right wing streamer has called him out for faking his online game streams. He's the richest man
Asmongold
in the world.
Asmongold isn't right. He's not right wing.
Oh, Ben, he really is.
No, really Asmongold's like he's nah. Stop it.
I knew you getting the internet was a mistake.
Stop it.
I'm going to complete my parallel. Right?
Do it. Come on. Hit me with it.
They both come from privileged backgrounds.
They do.
Based on generational wealth.
Yeah.
They both use the media to influence public opinion, promote their own ventures, and use their platforms for personal vendettas and sensationalism.
Okay.
They both got insane, weird projects like, I'm going to build Xanadu, a private estate with art and wealth and all this kind of stuff.
A million statues.
A million statues. Or we're going to go to Mars. We'll be there by 2025. No, we won't, Musky boy. All of it pointing to the fact that this is still happening. The ultra rich buying our diet of information and using it to enrich themselves further was happening then, and it's still happening now.
That's f***ing depressing.
So I'm aware that like you watch the movie and you're like, okay, yeah, it's technical this, it's technical that, it's technical the other. As a letter, as a screaming warning from the past, this has never been more relevant. There is an unelected man with an office in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
He's only there because he owns a media empire and has money. And he's now deciding policy for America and running campaigns trying to get Labour out in the UK.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I feel like that this isn't going to be the first example that we've had.
Right.
I feel like every iteration of most governments is going to follow similar suit. You know?
Exactly. But I think that's the thing. It's going to happen. It's always happening. We've got a particularly egregious example going on at the moment.
Yeah.
But like this is old. This is literally old news.
That's upsetting. I'm glad that you've brought this up, though, because it's nice to have a balance between very hard-hitting, real, actual comparisons of RoboCop and Citizen Kane, and then the light-hearted ones.
Yeah, RoboCop, you know what I mean? RoboCop is...
Are you ready for me to sum up this film?
I'm ready for you to do what you think is the sum up of this film, yes, Ben, and then I'm going to surprise you.
Okay. All right.
Finger up the bum.
You ready for this? What? So my grand takeaway from Citizen Kane, the Beatles. The Beatles are massively important when it comes to the music publishing business side of things, right?
Food webs. Birds wouldn't have a food source without them.
See what I mean?
Idiot.
Thousands of songs
right.
from the musicians that changed the world of music and art forever for the better. They fundamentally crafted stuff. Vox invented distortion so that these guys could play Shea Stadium. That shit is from the Beatles. You're welcome, every single distortion user ever.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I mean, you pull a face. Nine Inch Nails use distortion.
Yeah, they do. You're welcome. But it's fine. black musicians didn't do distortion with the blues.
Vox didn't make it.
Okay, Vox didn't make it.
Vox didn't make fine. It. Vox fine, invented fine. It for the Beatles at Shea Stadium.
In which case, Samsung invented the touchscreen with the A54.
No, it was the A21S because... Right,
okay,
you know
yeah. I mean, there were touchscreens before that, but it wasn't made by Samsung, so what's the point?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm with
Samsung
you.
Samsung invented
the
Samsung touchscreen. Yeah. Vox invented the Vox distortion.
Beatles are responsible for metal, I guess.
Beatles are responsible for most music. You can trace it back. Their catalogue is so extensive, you can trace... most modern day music back to elements from the Beatles, from the early musicians, right?
Totally.
But f***ing hell, are they culturally exhausted? like, are they? They yeah, are they're quoted great. Everywhere. They're covered everywhere. They're reviewed left, right, and center. They're it's a nightmare on the cultural side of things. Very, very important on the publishing side of things because whoever owns the music publishing stuff,
yes,
controls quite a lot of lot of money there, right? Yeah. I feel like Citizen Kane is much the same as this. It's the Beatles of cinema.
Okay.
So from a filmmaking perspective and for its contributions to the craft, Citizen Kane is monumentally important.
Yes.
Like monumentally so. Groundbreaking technique, game-changing use of camera framing, camera angle, cinematography, lighting. It's a pioneer in storytelling and editing, the way that they, like you've said, the way that they compound frames together.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. And because of this influence over an entire industry... the techniques introduced in Kane, evident in today's films, like 8 decades later, they've all become so standard that they no longer hit the same as they once did,
totally,
right? We've
totally,
been completely
totally.
Spoiled. So in answer to our initial question, is Citizen Kane still relevant? The answer is both yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Yes for all of the above, because everyone today, Fincher in Panic Room, has utilized things to a better degree and to a more technically...
Well, just he's got the benefit of, you know, being 50 years later in time. So you would hope... you'd hope he'd
exactly
it, right.
This is what I'm saying though, but that idea is present in Citizen Kane in 1941, which is mental to me.
Yeah.
So what it did for cinema, absolutely, yes, it is relevant. It always will be. We need to be grateful for it. We need to be thankful. Every film that we watch today in some way has been touched by Citizen Kane.
Mm-hmm.
Like square in the keynote, it's been again a little tickle, little fondle, little whoop.
But for me
personally, no.
Right.
No. It's not relevant at all. It's the bank buying a human child and the struggles of the wealthy and the corruption of power and old school morality.
It's so much more than that.
I can't relate to this shit. I can't relate to it. It's boring.
Right.
It's boring.
Right.
Where are the misunderstood monsters who just want to be loved? Eh? Where are the weirdly full of red flags final people that I inexplicably fall in love with for no reason every single time?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the brains?
Right.
Where's the...
right, okay.
Where's the IQ? You know what I mean? The thinly veiled in tiny red pasty brains.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's no cleavage covered in brains, so what's there for you?
This is what I mean. It's nowhere.
Right.
All of that stuff is nowhere. What's even the point? What, am I going to watch this so I can go wank off some fart sniffing Bellend beyond a library in black and white? No. I don't want to do that, Rob. But clearly, you're about to tell me why you do.
No.
Would you like to sum up this film?
No, I'm going to tell you why this film is actually... I'm surprised that this film didn't connect with you. Because this is a film that I think speaks very deeply to the life that you've led and the life that I've led.
I'll agree.
I think it's a film that talks about you can struggle your way there and you can get it and you can find yourself unhappier than you've ever been.
Yep.
and the fallacy of legacy.
Yeah.
How the joy in life is the process of working towards something, mm-hmm. not in the having.
Yeah, 100%.
He starts at the top. So he picks a small newspaper because he can enjoy building it up and the sort of striving to have. That he enjoys the building.
Yeah, yeah.
But once he's built, he's unhappy.
Yeah, of course.
And so then he picks an impossible mission, which is making his untalented mistress into something respectable.
Yeah.
Because he knows she'll never get there. But it allows him to engage in the chase of getting it perpetually.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why he's so angry with her when she says, I can't do this anymore because it's me they're mocking. He's like, no. I need you to do this. I need you to keep engaging in this ridiculous mission because the trying is the game. And the fun is in getting the platinum trophy, not in the having of it.
Mm-hmm.
As a film about loss, as a film about thinking that you'd lost everything and then getting to a point where you go, oh, actually, now I don't have it. I realize that that was super important.
Yes.
I don't know what more could relate to. It's not a film about a rich guy. It's a film about any guy. It uses a rich guy because if we started off with a poor fella who's, you know, coming
I know
back,
what you're saying.
And then he builds it all up and then he's unhappy.
Yeah.
That doesn't tell the story of, as he says in his own words, if I hadn't been born rich, I might have had a chance at being a decent guy.
100%. And I like all that stuff. It's not lost on me. It's a very sort of like, it's the very forefront of the film. It's good. The only thing that troubles me with it is...
Rich, so you can't relate because you're an inverse snob.
No. I feel like... that's very funny, but no, that's not it. Me and you's taken a lot of time out to work on accountability, mm-hmm. and I feel like that's the big thing here. He never once looks in the mirror, and he never once has anyone that will say, every room that you walk mm-hmm. in stinks of shit. You know what I mean?
He does. He's got his friend with Leland, and he pushes him away precisely for that reason.
This is what I'm saying, though. But look, okay, so for me, you were my Leland, and you were like, you're a f-ing nightmare, mm-hmm. what are you doing? And rather than going, you're fired, I'll write a review for you that makes you seem like an absolute dickhead to one of your mates, which is just pure manipulation and just, again, denying any sort of accountability whatsoever.
Yep.
Instead of that, you've got me to a place where I have to sit and stare in the mirror, and it makes me sad for a bit. but also it forces me to look at some of the really like complicated things that have been going on in my brain and head and challenge why I think certain ways and why I do certain things and why I live that life in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, Charles Kane was sort of bought.
Yeah.
So he didn't really have a choice.
He was bred for it.
Yeah, he didn't have a choice about it, which again is upsetting. But the relatability of, you are right. It's a similar thing. The chase is always mm-hmm. better than the actual getting. But it's the lack of accountability and the lack of self-awareness and the complete committal to self-worth being what you bring to the table. And even if you have like a 4,900-acre estate,
mm-hmm.
which has been built, it's essentially a castle museum.
It's a mausoleum. It's a tomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tomb. So you've built this entire thing that has everything in the world in it.
And you keep it in boxes in the basement.
You'd still be horribly unhappy.
Buying it brought you joy, but now you've got it. And that's the same with Susan Alexander. That's the same with everything. And as as an analysis of the American dream and how hollow that is and going, okay, so you value materialism,
mm-hmm.
you value the having of things, look where it gets you. It's still incredibly relevant. Now, here's where I might surprise you is that what's important for me about Citizen Kane could fill hours and hours and hours of podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find most interesting about Citizen Kane is as a film, it's a champion against everything it is today. It hates what it is today.
Okay.
Citizen Kane broke the mold of the existing film knowledge, of the existing canon, of the existing sort of top 10 list, right? It went, nah, call that.
Yeah.
It said everything that we knew about filmmaking that came before was supposed to be forgotten. And it tells a 2-hour story about how trying to be the best, how trying to outlast history, was a pointless exercise. Citizen Kane, the film, hates Citizen Kane, the historical document. It literally says, no word can sum up a man or a film or anything.
I love this.
Because you need a 1 hour podcast for that, idiot. Yeah. You f***ing wanker, Orson. Obviously.
Absolute bellend.
To sum up anything, it's a 1 hour podcast.
Yeah.
That's why everyone's here. But if you take the polish off this film, you take it off that pedestal, it's still a great movie about capitalism, about loss, about hubris, about all those sorts of things. And it's only a boring movie, and it's only a dull movie, and it's only a pretentious movie if you watch it while it's up on that pedestal. If you sit down and go, oh, this is the greatest film ever made, is it? Come on, then. 100%. If you watch it the same way you would watch any other 1941 film, it's the greatest film of all time.
It's the greatest 1941 film of all time.
100% that.
Yeah.
The film is literally saying, this legacy nonsense is only going to get you killed, and it's only going to suck the joy out of something. And so if you approach this film without that legacy, it's a gem. It's a gem that's still just as enjoyable today. But if you watch it because of its importance, you're not going to have a good time.
I love that. I think I'll agree wholeheartedly. I think the research into this film has sort of
killed it.
Dampened it a bit for me.
And the reverence for it as well. It's a film. It's a 1941 film. What do you expect?
I thought I was going to get some fun out of this sort of like weird Facebook group, but nah.
Right.
It's just, it just fed into every stereotype that I held. And I was like, this is why I hate this.
Right. People who enjoy being part of the club and going, stroking their chins and going, here's why it's the greatest. And I'm like, but do you enjoy it as a film? And I think if you approach it as this titan, then no.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit like if you walk in the room and you go, oh my God, that's Charles Foster Kane, you're not going to end up being mates. If you walk up to him and go, all right, dickhead.
Yeah.
He'd go.
Yeah, yeah. Treat him like a person.
Right. Do you want to play a game?
I'd love to.
Right. This is, I've not done this before. I quite liked last week where you just went in blind. So I've got a quiz for you, Ben, and this might shake the very core of your little chip on your shoulder, proud to be a poor lifestyle.
Chimp on my shoulder.
Chimp on your shoulder, yeah. Monkey on your back.
Got you.
This is a quiz.
Got you.
Are you a budding billionaire? Sorry, are you a rose-budding billionaire? That just
okay.
Yeah, that doesn't work, but it occurred.
It's fine.
So a question for you. Are you a natural dreamer or someone who focuses on subtle details?
Oh, God.
I can answer this for you, Ben. You're a dreamer.
Yeah.
You have a million ideas a week and execute half of them.
Yeah. I execute 500,000 ideas a week.
Yeah. No. You instantiate 500,000 ideas a week. Execute.
No. It's on record.
Okay, fine.
I have a million ideas. Execute half of them. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Do you get a buzz?
What was the question?
Are you a dreamer or do you focus on more subtle details?
Oh, Dreamer.
Do you get a buzz from taking risks or do you prefer to plan meticulously? I mean, come on, dude.
Okay, hold on. So this is a difficult one because I will jump at anything all the time.
Yep.
But if I like something, then I have to plan out to the second exactly what it is doing and when it's doing.
Yeah.
So a little column A, little column B. I'm going to go risk it.
Risk it with risk taker because that is the truth.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself as a natural boss type or someone who is happy doing the basics all rounder?
No, I don't like doing the all rounder.
You're a big boss. You're a big boss man.
No, I'm neither of those, to be honest.
You're asking me if I want sauce salad.
I guess go all rounder. I don't like either of those. I don't like being the idea of being big boss, but I also don't like the one of being sort of like, yeah, I'll just take it as it goes.
That's such Sigma energy, bro.
That's fine.
Do you have an innate sense of what people in general respond to, or do you have more of a feeling for what the rich prefer? Are you common touch or a money magnet?
Obvious money magnet.
No, I'm not putting money magnet. I'm not putting money.
Common touch.
Yeah.
I'm a money repellent.
Right, exactly.
I'm
like... Exactly. I often wonder if like you've actually got magnetic properties and it just happens to be the exact same magnetic properties money has. I've seen it move away from you on a table.
Yeah. Yeah, I've actively chased a fiver down the street before. You know what I mean?
Who wouldn't? How conscious are you of your limitations? Do you take advice from others?
Yes.
No, the answers are what limitations, or advice taker?
Oh, advice taker. I'm very aware of my limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Are you joking?
Ben, how's the gym?
It's Yeah, it's fine. My right side of my chest.
Why is that? Is that because the doctor said that you couldn't go to the gym anymore and then you went to the gym?
No, it's because the doctor said I can start going to the gym slowly. So then when I slowly went to the gym, technically the same, my right lungs is now. Yeah.
Went to the doctor's real quick on that one though, didn't you?
I've got an appointment with a specialist. If I go to the doctor, they're going to go, oh, we're going to book you in.
Or are you somebody who doesn't know their limitations?
I am, because if I go to the f***ing doctors now, they're going to be like, yeah, let's get you an appointment with a specialist. Next time he's in, 19th. You've already got one.
I'm talking about now, Ben. I'm talking about the 6 months of the last year.
Oh, yeah, no, f***, I ignored all that. That's because I was scared. Okay. You know what I mean? That wasn't because I needed advice. I was a little bit of a fright.
How do you relax? Are you a connoisseur of the arts? Or do you prefer to just focus on your business?
I guess they kind of go hand in hand with the podcast.
Do you make time for your interests or does your business need you?
I make time for interests.
All right, last one.
Go on.
So you've made your billions. Congratulations. What do you do with them? Now the answers are, do with them? My business is still growing. Or, now I can do something to help others with all that wealth.
Probably B.
Yeah, come on, man. Now, are you ready?
I wouldn't keep it for a second.
Ben,
go on.
You're a budding billionaire, mate.
Fuck off.
Bill Gates would be proud of you. You have a natural business acumen with the vision to develop ideas and opportunities that no one else sees. Yet you still have the common touch to actually understand what the rest of us want and need. You do all this with a charm and humor that people warm to and identify with. And your charitable ideas could transform the lives of millions.
Just a shame that all of that loveliness is wrapped in just a big old bundle of dickhead.
It's just all wrapped in the man I love the most, who is also, by a wide margin, the least reliable man I know. Comment corner?
Yeah, hit me with it.
Right, so I got a couple for you today.
Go on.
We had some lovely people get in touch. And trust me, I am as surprised as anyone when I say this. About the movie Inseminoid.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Right. So we had Lisa Schlesinger. Schlesinger?
Smashed it.
Yep. She got in touch and she was like,
okay,
my dad made this film.
Amazing.
She said, look, Inseminoid wasn't that bad. My dad, Peter Schlesinger, was the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it wasn't. It suffered from us covering it as part of our Alien series. And the comparison isn't really that fair. But as a piece of British filmmaking, it did really well at the time. It's just not aged brilliantly.
I'll disagree wholeheartedly.
Well, you say that, but Lisa says, I'm only joking. It really was terrible.
That's amazing.
And Candy, her sister, got in touch on a separate Inseminoid reel.
Okay.
And said, my dad made this. And you replied to that one.
I did. I remember this one.
You said, please pass on my thanks. I've shown this film to so many people. Incredible B-movie.
True. All true fact.
I've never seen more comments more accurately sort of depict the difference. I'm like...
Imagine if they don't know that two people run that account and they're just sort of like, this guy's a fucking schizophrenic.
No, he's an absolute sycophant. Just whatever we say, he's like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's it.
But Candy got in touch and said, that's so nice to hear. He would have loved to hear this. He passed recently, so condolences to them.
Oh, I haven't read that.
And congratulations on being part of the Inseminoid family.
Oh, I'm really...
Yeah, that's a horrible phrase, isn't it? The Inseminoid family.
I've started using Inseminoided as like a way instead of inducted.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you're using it instead of inducted rather than lovemaking. Hey, do you want to come back to my house and get Inseminoided?
On a completely unrelated note, f***ing is now referred to as implementing.
Nice. And then we had a listener called Libby get in touch.
Yeah.
Asking if we ever watched B horror movies. So I was like, ooh. I'm going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Part of this podcast, there's a guy who's really good with those. And it's not me.
I am.
They wanted to know what you thought about Zombievers.
Zombievers. Okay. Zombievers is fucking terrible, but amazing.
Right. Okay. They agree.
I've got the DVD here.
Yeah.
Look.
Oh, you literally showing the DVD on an audio podcast. Brilliant.
Enjoy it.
They also watched Arena Wars last night. Naff, but watchable, they said.
I've not seen Arena Wars.
Right. So they say, think Running Man meets Battle Royale.
All
right.
That's on the list.
That's
on the list.
From Timu as well. So
nice.
Right.
Nice.
And then the last one was Rippy the Red.
So Rippy, Rippy is the killer kangaroo, right? The Aussie outback.
You're gonna have to tell me, bud. I'm too busy watching Kino and stroking my beard.
You literally, yeah, you're sucking black and white people off behind the library.
I don't see color, mate.
I know, that's what I mean. 1940s vision.
Right, exactly. Black and white.
Everything's in black and white for you. Oh, I see what I've done. Hold on.
Yeah.
I see what I've done. No. You're sucking people off in black and
there
white.
There we go.
There you go.
There
that's
go.
Better.
There
that's what go. I meant. There it is.
Beautiful.
Reframe it. You know what I mean? Now the spoon's in focus.
That, sadly, is all the time we have.
Running out. Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. You have no idea how much this means to us. Just before we wrap up the show, if you have enjoyed this episode and you want to support the show, can you please leave us a review wherever you're listening to this? Tell a friend about us.
Yeah,
it really does help us more than you know.
Find us on socials, likes and comments and all that sort of stuff. Shares to your stories are... I cannot tell you how incredibly powerful one of you lot sharing something to your story and liking it or commenting it is. Mm. And also, if you want more show and more content and an extra episode every month, support us over on Patreon. It's £1. It's £1 a month. You know, it's
£1 a month.
It's just so that we can talk to you honestly and openly and go, oh, we're friends here. Let's bring out the bad jokes.
Yeah. Plus you get some extra fun shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. We love and appreciate each and every one of you more than you will ever know.
We really, really do. And to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. Ben is now going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of this greatest movie of all time.
Yeah.
Into a little Monday motivational pep talk.
Yeah.
While I just tell you to... consume.
Go watch the Beatles of cinema. You know what I mean? Beatles being important with the publishing side of things, and it's like whoever owns the publishing rights of the Beatles may or may not have been killed because he may or may not have owned the Beatles. You know what I mean? There's a whole conspiracy theory there. If you want to get into it, Michael Jackson owned them, by the way. You know what I mean? He's dead now. Coincidence? I don't think so. Citizen Kane's dead now. You know what I mean? Charles Foster bit the banker's ledge, didn't he? He's gone now. I think the main takeaway from this is blue chip cabaret puss really is worth the chase. Do you like fantasy? Independent artists? Dragons? Dungeons and Dragons? Of course you do, you massive nerd. And so you should, because so do I. Emma Law Rich is an independent artist who makes amazing products to show off that nerd pride. Incredible quality acrylic charms, stickers, shaker charms, spinning charms, acrylic pins, custom art prints, everything. Loads. There's tons. It's all available right now. I got my shaker charm the other day. It's like a beholder, you know, from D&D with like this, you shake it and it's got the shaky eye. And when I shake it, the eye moves. It's fucking dope. Emma will be appearing at MegaCon Live 2025 on the 25th and 26th of January at the XL in London. If you're heading to MegaCon, make sure you go see her. Tell her that we sent you and get yourself some insanely cool nerd pride. If you're not heading to MegaCon this year, first off, why not? Second off, head on over to emmalawrich.com, that's emmalawrich.com, and grab your goodies from there. Go follow her on Instagram. Thanks again to Emma Law Rich for sponsoring this episode.